Blog Talk Radio.
Found us. Thank you very much. Masonic Effects. Don't mean to make it difficult to find us, but then again, we're not really handing it out the street side, are we? No, of course not. Oh, on this, this is a fall day here where I am. So in the southern hemispheres, you'll be looking forward to spring. Good on you. Good on you. Continuity and the balance and everything else happening, but I was beginning to write the show today. I was thinking about some, you know, impressions of ideas that are floating around. There are always brilliant ideas floating around if you look for them. And one that struck me as sort of one that's been in the back of my mind. I've just had some difficulty with it. And it's like you have to remember, I'm one of those people when a person asks me how I am, I don't know intuitively that they don't really care how I am, that they're asking to be polite. It is convention. And I've had one of my therapists, one of my staff, pointed that out to me when I was sitting there and I was just turned and started to answer. And she was quite right. I have to admit, up to a point. It's like, if you don't know, you're not interested, don't ask it. But she said, you know, people don't really want to know. So, okay. I keep that in mind. I don't accept it. I keep it in mind. It's one of those back of the mind kind of things that's been lingering about, what do they call them? Elevator speeches. If you have to, you know, the task was to create a commentary about masonry that could be contained in the amount of time it takes in those random encounters in an elevator. And I thought, well, that's an interesting framework. You know, if your head is full of cotton, then it certainly does bring attention to it to help clarify. But I thought, here, and you already know what I'm like, you know, so no apologies, but I'm sorry if I find it tedious. It would be like you saying, describe the Mona Lisa in an elevator speech. Well, it's a painting of somebody's wife, or it's a beautiful painting of somebody's life, and it's held under glass, and it's known for that enigmatic smile. That does that sort of capture it? It's like saying, for to me, it's like saying, well, could you talk to us about geometry? Well, you know, do we want to talk about Euclidean geometry, or do you want to talk about fractal geometry? Well, I don't know. I'm not that clever. Well, all it is a bunch of lines and circles. You know, that's it. Elevator rides. What is philosophy? Well, as one of my failures, it was to experience, this unpleasantness was to experience this senior warden telling me, referring to all philosophy as BS. And I thought, well, there's profound conversation coming out of this. Except it was dismissive, which, ruined a wonderful occasion over a pint or two to really get into that. And later, I find that how much energy was put into those debates, debating the merit of common sense and the nature of common sense. Those truths that we all sort of have that aren't refutable. They are what they are. It's if you leave the window down and it's on a rainy day, it's likely to get wet inside. Well, that's common sense. Oh, and we can immediately be all judgy and competitive and say, well, it depends on wind direction and blah, blah, blah. You leave the window down on a rainy day, likely to get rain. Don't be surprised. You're going to get it wet. You see the thinking, the work is the effort. Is it much effort to put together to try and compress something that's really pretty amazing into, a couple of, a minute or less? But I, it's point a finger and say, yes, it's completely valid. Well, yeah, I suppose not around me, but I think it can be. I don't think that's the purpose isn't self-serving. It's like, I don't need a 1 minute analysis of what I'm doing and what I'm, what we're trying to achieve and things like that. But then I can take the question seriously. If you're ever interested, because I don't see it as a drive-by kind of a thought, to be honest with you. I don't see it as a fill-in during an uncomfortable pause in an elevator with strangers. Is somebody going to speak, or are we worried about that lady coughing all over without a hanky, or how many other things? Don't make eye contact, because that might lead to a conversation. You've been in there. The work is, but I can't take it seriously. And if you'd like to buy me a glass of wine or a cup of, I have a chai, that would be lovely. And then, I need to relax a little bit. And then I can talk to you. Then we can talk. Because I think it comes to more to answer that. It's like, just to do it in an elevator is like saying, this is the way. I know the way that I know the definition, and I can give it to you. What it is and how you define it, I don't know. It's would you start with something ridiculous and say it's relaxing, it's comforting, it's reaffirming, it's validating, it's challenging, it's beautiful. Those are the kind of things that you would say. I might. If you don't, I might. So it depends. That person going down the elevator might be with me one day and you the next. And so would we be leaving them with the impression that, those boys are just completely confused? Yeah, we would, unless we can share a context. And please, oh my goodness, I'm not talking about that bumper sticker stuff. That I love the brevity. Yes, I love Occam's Ladder. I'm a slave to Occam's Ladder. Yes. And the idea of simplest explanations. Yes, and primacy. I'm all about that. Yes, or I try to be. There is no one way of describing, unless you're really being abstract, and then what's the meaning? You're losing meaning, probably. Yeah, changes with the certain levels of abstraction. But to say that it's something that teases the imagination and opens us up to this question, and it might be, and here's my dilemma today, Am I kidding myself in saying that that whole search for improvement is feeding ego, or is it in some way? Well, you could say that. Yes, it absolutely is feeding ego, except that premise is anathema to masonry. Oh, I know we're talking about, you know, brotherhoods within brotherhoods and their influence on the craft over the centuries. But hear me out here. Just bear with me. I'm talking here about the sense of potential, not a promise of greatness or nothing to do with entitlement, but the embrace of the unknown, to the unknown. Why is in the world with apartheid and environmental existential crisis? How can we claim to find happiness and contentment? But we do. We prevail, and it's not in spite of the challenges, it's because of the challenges around us. The trying to explain and trying to understand, and doing that in a way that is enlightened. We call that, when we're trying to make explanation in that's enlightened, we are generally trying to persuade our audience that conflict and leads us to a loss in some, it takes away, robs us of a part of our soul every time that we show aggression or lose that control and become angry. Now, that I have to qualify. There is anger that is absolutely necessary, that is necessary for self-preservation. And in other words, there are boundaries. And that's normal, although it's unpleasant, and although you'll be definitely criticized for, but when it's triggered for no apparent reason, that's I think common sense. If common sense tells you there's somebody walking around with a chip on their shoulder, there's something wrong, and they're just looking for the next victim to fall in front of their gaze to unload their vitriol. There's something wrong. The person is struggling at a deeper level. You know, we know that. Little kids know that. Because they can sense it. It's like they sense it through their skin. Fortunately, they're born with that intuitive knowledge and intuitive understanding. The way we are, get into the elevator together, one person in that elevator will be establishing a feeling of grace, will be at least wrestling with it, or may simply have tired of the clamor and feel that there's no point to it. Clamor. We want to persuade to the reduction of conflict, which inevitably, you know, unless somebody is psychotic and homicidal, it requires some resolution. And what often stands in the way isn't the idea of resolving conflict, but it's ego. Because we like to, you know, we have that lovely addiction to feeding the ego. We have pride, we have to be right. How can I, when it's justified, when I've got my calculator out and I am justifiably homicidal. It's like this old woman said, wrote many years ago, I wish they would stop giving us reasons to kill their children. Why don't they learn? You know how empty and heartless that is, how senseless that type of thinking is. So we're going to persuade by our bearing, if we know how, we're going to persuade the, to take that path less trodden. We can do combat once again. The profane world, it teaches us the calculation, but are you, if you have the mathematics of a Mason, your calculation is different, isn't it? Your calculation is about reason and connectivity and persuasion and skills that enhance our abilities. But they're not fun. We don't get to scream and yell, and we can't be we can't use that sense of overpowering our victim or our opponent. You know, there's always somebody that's bigger and better and stronger. And there's always, so where are you going with this? Well, that's people that are in their own head. The world is conflict. And masonry begins has redescribed the world as a place where there's harmony, where there's peace and trust and consanguinity. You know, I love that. I always love that word. Balance. And where there's need, we can, if we're looking for purpose, it need be no further than understanding our duties and our tasks. What's our next duty to ourself? I know that might be a little too zen for this crowd, but, you know, what is your next duty to yourself? And then do it. And the question is, how do you know? Well, you begin to have that conversation, that your own elevator conversation. What are the priorities that I have? And in any given moment, does it just stretch on and on? Well, no. The interesting part about the human condition is that it's just so dynamic, floats. And we have ideas we have ideas that we keep in the back of our mind, as we say. There's no back of the mind, but we keep them there. We hold them. And we deal with whatever is coming ahead, whatever demands are in front of us. And that's normal. And is everybody quite capable to that kind of sequencing or juggling? Well, some people struggle with it. And we can say, well, look at that person. There's something wrong with them. Well, in the big scheme of things, we're saying what we've got this sense that what's created is somehow flawed or doesn't have a purpose that we don't understand. Is there a balance that we're not seeing? Well, I tend to think, as soon as you begin to phrase it that way, you begin to think, well, of course, that's the case. There's balance. How can I make sense of chaos, or how can I make sense of the fate? Well, there's beautiful explanations. They're beautiful because of the symmetry of them, because of the common sense, the primacy of them. That makes it, that enriches our experience, because we put those formerly imperceptible motivations into at our fingertips, and all the time knowing some recalcitrant little 15-year-old would say, but you're just constantly rationalizing. It's a long elevator ride, don't you think? Today, we have a pretty good program, I think. The music is, and I apologize if a very lovely listener let me know that the music wasn't being conveyed. So today, fingers crossed, I've set our technicians, our computer engineers, to the task, which is me and the YouTube channel trying to sort this out, and Blog Talk Radio trying to get to the bottom of this. I hope and trust that we've solved the problem today. Not touch on wood. The program is a good one, and I recycled a title. And those of you who've been putting their cup into this well for 10 or 11 years will remember. Of course, you'll remember being and becoming. Well, I've recycled it. I didn't think there were many of you out there. Maybe I'll put being and becoming part two. So the music is, I hope, meditative and carries you along and makes you feel receptive and open, soothes. The poetry today, I have to admit, I'm influenced. I'm like a magpie. I see something shiny, I've got to float down and examine it. But this is the work of Alfred Lord Tennyson. And I'm going to be trying to share with you his poem, Ulysses. And I think you'll find why it has appeal. Now I want to know what's up with you, with the listeners to Masonic Effects. You fellas from Japan, you've been tuning in for how long? My goodness, forever. And what's up with that? And you guys, you are Russian brethren. You okay? Like, you know, all right, it's just a question. It's just so refreshing to have this connection. And South Africa, you discovered us. Excellent, excellent. And I hope that we reward your curiosity many times over. And Greece, whoever you are, or you and your mates are, thank you for tuning in. I like to think, you know, this is how dodgy this whole project is. You're tuning in not because of any advertising, because that doesn't happen. Well, maybe indirectly, but I like to flatter myself and say that it's because we're producing something that's imaginative and answers some of your questions or is entertaining. And Britain, what do I say? You just think connection, in a way, in my thinking, it legitimizes this. I'm probably not the Mason any of you are. North America, what are we up to? We have some soul searching to do from an area that is so, you know, this is not the North American situation. We have very, very dedicated branches and elements of Masonry. And we see the question of relevance coming up time and time again. And I tend to think that might have to do with, you know, the nastiness of real life and changes. Time doesn't wait for us, and I like thinking that I'm in charge. You know, I'm part of that cohort that's in charge, or at least I grew up with that, and now I'm not in charge of very much. I like living well and comfortably and safely with you, and with the family and friends. But that point, I don't get to set that, and neither do you. We don't get to set, you know, who's in charge, and that's all the powers and authorities are going to be lasting. And history teaches us that that's just foolish. And the jingoism, the way we know that does come to an end, always ignominiously, it seems. And are you looking for stars on your report to be the biggest menace, or is that? I listened to a young fellow one day. He's in a tremendous amount of trouble, and he wanted to make sure that he wanted me to tell him that he would be remembered, and that's how everybody, you know, all the authorities would know his name. Yeah, it doesn't really happen. Anyway, sit back. We'll get into this in a minute. I hope you enjoy the program, of course. And to kick it off, it's fingers crossed you're going to hear it out there. Indelible and Nocturnal. This is Wynton Marsalis. Cheers. Thank you. lovely. Just absolutely lovely. Let's try a moment to reflect. Just one of those. It won't last long. Can't you see how complex we are when we pause to reflect? When you look around, it's like we see what we see, but we translate it, don't we? What does it all mean? Is it, if we have a mind, if we have this mindset that life around us is tense and chaotic, that's what we see. That's what we see. So we can influence for the better of all. Realistic. We think that governments are there to help improve the lives of people, of nations. And then we look at the, that is the ideal. And then we look, of course, the reality is different. And we can say it's absolutely, you know, it hasn't achieved the ideal, therefore it must have failed. And that's not the case. So much is revealed about our understanding of this phenomenon called masonry when we stop and look, think. All surgeons are alike, that they have specialized skill sets, surgeons. Their specialty within the specialty shows us different applications require even more training, even more from them. I like this analogy. It flatters us all with a motif that is only thought of when needed, you know, the importance of a surgeon. You don't walk around saying, well, here's, I've got a surgeon's number on speed dial. We revere the skills of medicine, not as a walk around thought, but when the context becomes personal. A wife, a child, a best friend, a neighbor. Then the entire medical community becomes significant. So is it so hard to associate them with a prayer? How often do I do that? You know, particularly when things are so, but does it change my affinity with the great architect of the universe becomes crystal clear in that moment? I need that, whatever that is, je ne sais quoi. But the confusion comes later. Am I still the deist I thought I was? And is the connection with spirituality still strong? Yes, of course. There is a point to be made, and it involves the way we pause and think about who and what we are. Are we struggling with ambivalence about becoming and being? One, when we consider our relationship with old, with yesterday, and insert the phrase Masonic oaths in this if you're so inclined. Looking at each other, we couldn't tell if we're in a state of ambivalence or not, being and becoming. So instead, we are left to assume each one of us is true to those lofty obligations, each one of us. When we consider the options, it is not so bad to make that assumption. We see the individuality as differences. We're struggling with a longing for the truth to be simple, but it never is. To find a beautiful outcome, we need some way to explain contradictions. I think it is for this reason we shy away from the question. If a brother is dissatisfied, he will live in that bubble of dissatisfaction. The careful observer will see that what the casual glance would never suspect. During life, a human being, of consciousness, the sense of being one comes in hindsight. Are you conscious and aware? Hindsight, no ideal. It safely leaves us ground for further improvement, which might be one of the most challenging elements. Learning to stop feeding our ego and get on with life. Ah, there, I've said it. If it is, as I believe, a truism, we become what we do. we need to know, is this clumsy version, I need to know if this clumsy version of a complete man is capable of refinement and sincerity. Don't want to say that I'm an altruist unless I am. I don't want to say I'm being truthful and honest unless I am. Oh, and I don't want to go through life with a little qualifier. I will do all of these things if it's convenient for me. That ain't going to happen, eh? Does it make sense, being and becoming? Relax. Look around it. And if we're prone to finding conflict in the way we think, it continues until we catch ourselves doing it and say, ah, there I go again. There, that's it. That's what it is. There's that old feeling that, you know, there's the differences, the distance between me and that person and me and the subject matter. But it's not like that we've fallen from heaven when we make those discoveries. Hopefully these understandings give us a little bit of a softer landing. Speaking of softer landings, Bill Evans doing a blue and green for us. Yeah. Lovely, huh? Really is. This is the poetry corner, as I like to think. Just a reminder. Why poetry? You know, it's like why ancient charges? why and why this intellectual dilemma? You know, here it is. Here's the message. Here's the lesson. And by the way, knowing and understanding is a prerequisite. but holy mackerel, I didn't know. I wasn't enrolled in this, so I have to pull together answers from my general knowledge. But there's a little part that has been specialized. So I think, wait, I'm going to study that material, and I have to look at it more closely. And lo and behold, what do I find? Answers, more connections. And every single time when I'm sitting talking, when we're together, the beauty of it is it's like mathematics. Thinking, I'm going to do an equation or statistics. I'll do an analysis. Let's say I'm doing something simple, bivariate analysis. It would be absolutely ridiculous to say, because I wrote out this formula, therefore I never have to write out another formula, and therefore that formula is applicable everywhere I go and whatever question comes to mind. You would think, how absurd. I think it's comparable to thinking that there is a pat answer, or you know, to in the, and that everything will be, we can simplify something that's complex. Well, we can. Geometry does that. Yeah, philosophy does that. But are we satisfied with the results? Well, that's a different story. Are we? What if? And this is where, you know, we find all kinds of parallels. You're in line with your question to, and I'm behind you in the line at in Delphi, and it's odd. There's a lot of clamor, and there's these priests, and they're marshaling us, and we get on with it, and she doesn't look good, man. This isn't what I expected, but the line is saying, get on, you know, get on, man, for you know. And after the journey to this spot, you want to, it's not for the light of heart. And look around, and I see all these famous people are in line too. And it's like, what in the world is going on here? Get on with it. And if you're sitting there frowning because you don't understand the answer, move along. You know, it's not up to the answer isn't up to, you know, to fulfill your understanding. You do that. You take the answer and fulfill your understanding. So move along, and you get one question, by the way. Move along. Sort of puts an urgency to the whole process, doesn't it? Going to an oracle, and then trying to figure out what in the world it was said, and how does that apply? Mm-hmm. And get on with it, and that's your challenge. And we're grateful for that opportunity. By the way. If we're thinking as sort of precarious little rationalists that there ought to be a perfect understanding, are you? If it was there and it hit you over the head, would you even recognize it? Life is like that. It gives us answers repeatedly until we understand them. And they're not with no intention. There's no intention for this to be pretty or simple or, you know, the truth never, it's not simple. It's kind of, the world around us is complex, and we can find beauty in that. Yeah, absolutely. Poetry, yeah? Poetry can provide comfort and boost the mood when we're stressed and there's grief and trauma. Yeah, it can. It helps us to form, it gives us words to form emotion. And the emotions that we have, it's like, you know, they aren't first words. The emotion is translated into language. Yeah. So what is that nature, that's this connectivity with the world around us? There's been a lot. There's been research, and we wanted to look at that. It's found evidence that writing or reading poetry can be helpful for people dealing with illness or adversity. Well, that's a lot of us in times when there's questions, and it can help with, you know, the expressive emotion, you know, fear and sadness and worry and things like that. It also found that writing and reading poetry can be a welcome distraction from stress and an opportunity for self-reflection. There we go. Self-reflection. We need that, don't we? But a bit of a structure. I'm not going to go to the mountaintop and look out and say, now I'm self-reflecting. Do it. Our voices, as Robert Carroll said, are embodiments of ourselves, whether written or spoken. Yeah. It is in times of extremity that we long to find words or hear other human voices letting us know we are not alone. So, poetry. Tennyson. I'm not thinking about the celebrity of these. I shy away, and you probably know, I shy away from, I cringe about, you know, finger pointed at us in the context of thinking about entitlement. I cringe at that. It's not that I think it's invalid. It's just, yeah, there we are. So I'm reflecting here with you with the work of a fellow that was born on the 6th of August in 1809. And he was with us until October 6th, 1892. English born, often regarded by notables as the chief representative of the Victorian age in poetry. And he became a peer in 1884, if that matters to some. Fourth in the line of 12 kids. His dad was a rector. Him and his two brothers, we don't want to hear anything about the women, do we? No. So he went on to Louth Grammar School. He did well. You know, he got a good education. And he was claimed that he was precocious. And he was already writing poetry before his teens. So let's be a bit generous with that. He's writing the styles of Alexander Pope or Walter Scott or John Milton. Well, if spoiler alert, if that was all that was available to you, think about it. We didn't have the sort of trash novel industry going on that we did, pulp industry that we have. But he was influenced by the bad boy of poetry, Lord Byron, another Lord. So real life affected him. I won't get into that. This is his poem, Ulysses, and it's a chewy little poem. I don't think we'll get through all of it today, so maybe the first part and the last, and I'll try and do an understanding. It profits little that an idle king by this still hearth among these barren crags, matched with an aged wife, I meet to dole on equal laws unto a savage race, that hoard and sleep and feed, and no, not me. I cannot rest from travel. I will drink life to the lees. All times I've enjoyed greatly, have suffered greatly, both with those that love me and alone on shore, and when through scudding drifts, the rainy heights, they vex the dim sea, I am become a name. For always roaming with a hungry heart, much have I seen and known, cities of men and manners, climates, councils and governments, myself not least, but honored of them all, and drunk delight of battle with my peers, far from the ringing plains of windy Troy. I am a part of all that I have met, yet all experience is an arch where through gleams that untraveled world whose margin fades forever and forever when I move. How dull it is to pause, to make an end, to rush unburnished, not to shine in use, as though to breathe were life piled on life. We're all too little, and of one to me little remains, but every hour is saved from that eternal silence. Something more, a bringer of new things and vile it were for some three sons to store and hoard myself and this gray spirit yearning in desire to follow knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bound of human thought. And then the end here. Of all the western stars until I die, to sail beyond the sunsets and the baths. It may be that the gulfs will wash us down. It may be we shall touch the happy isles and see the great Achilles, whom we know, though much is taken, much abides. And though we are now not that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. So we're hearing a summary of Ulysses, and it declares that there's little point in his staying home by this still hearth, and with his old wife doling out rewards and punishments for the unnamed masses who live in his kingdom. And still, speaking to himself, he proclaims that he cannot rest from travel, but feels compelled to live in the fullest and swallow every last drop of life. He has enjoyed all his experiences as a sailor who travels the seas, and he considers himself a symbol for everyone who wanders and roams the earth. His travels have exposed him to many different people and ways of living. They've also exposed him to the delight of battle. While fighting the Trojan War with his men, Ulysses declares that his travels and encounters have shaped who he is. Quote, I am a part of all that I have met, close quote. He asserts, and it is only when he is traveling that the margin of the globe that he has not yet traversed shrink and fade and cease to goad him. Doesn't matter. So he declares, Ulysses declares that it is boring to stay in one place and to remain stationary is to rust rather than to shine. To stay in one place is to pretend that all there is to life is the simple act of breathing, whereas he knows that, in fact, life contains such novelty and he longs to encounter this. And his spirit yearns constantly for new experiences. And in the final stanza, Ulysses declares that, addresses mariners with whom he's worked and traveled and went through storms. And he declares that although he and they are old, they still have the potential to do something noble and honorable before the long day wanes. He encourages them to make use of their old age because it is not too late to seek a newer world. And he declares that his goal is to sail toward the beyond the sunset until his death. Perhaps he suggests they may even reach the happy isles, wherever those are, or the paradise of perpetual summer described in Greek mythology, where great heroes like the warrior Achilles were believed to have been taken after their deaths. Although Ulysses and his mariners are not as strong as they were in youth, they are strong in will and are sustained by their resolve to push forward, onward, relentlessly, to strive, to seek, to find, not to yield. Hey, old boys, there might be hope for us yet, huh? That's around midnight, of course, by Eldar Djangarok. Beautiful. Beautiful. Things happen. We've been studying the history in Amsterdam and looking at as a snapshot. We've tried to freeze the history for a moment so everything's standing still so we can examine some things that have happened and wonder out loud about associations and influence. Now, we're presuming here that there's been a Big Bang experience in London, and that's where masonry began. But we know, and depending on your approach to history, we know that our philosophy, we know the ideas were identified, the founding. If we look at the question where these ideas came from, they go back thousands of years, thousands and thousands of years. So where did it start? So we're looking at the period of 1794. Remember, in the background, French Revolution. Keep that in mind. Making a hell of a lot of noise. And earlier, the revolution in the Americas made a hell of a lot of noise. But in Holland, the Dutch and French language found their way into Lodge. Now that's a point where I am. That's a sensitive topic because it hasn't happened yet. It will inevitably, but how long will it take for that to happen? The most important requirements which promote the prosperity and durability of societies in general and of Freemasonry in particular contribute to, and finally to this understanding of unmistaken language of the democratic revolutions. And finally, it helps us to understand the advantages have been ours because of this. Note that the master has become a mentor. We have come a long way from the late 17th century when, under the impact of the English Revolution, the freedom of Scottish and English stonemasons became the liberty of gentlemen Freemasons. At each moment in this process, these words existed in profoundly different contexts and had, as a result, profoundly different meanings. But we must not exaggerate the differences. Freemasonry was one of the social practices that transmitted into the continent a vocabulary that put freedom and equality central in the word list. Without these linguistic resources, it would have been harder for some men and women to speak and understand those same words in the 1790s, or for that matter, in the 1990s. In 1790, one Dutch patriot wrote to his English friend James Watt, the inventor of the steam engine, "The French go on softly but surely, and if you will examine without prejudice the National Assembly in Paris, you shall admire them and confess that they have now far outrun their instructors, the English." For many Dutch Republicans of the 1790s, the French were their deliverers. Throughout Western Europe, the events of the later 1780s were also seen to bear relation to English principles. And by mid-January 1795, the French army invaded the Dutch Republic and routed the Prussians, and by their consent, British occupiers and counter-revolutionaries. Amsterdam patriots and Republicans in turn rose in rebellion and proclaimed a new Batavian Revolution. Other cities quickly followed, and nowhere was the enthusiasm greater for the new and long frustrated revolution than in Amsterdam. On the 24th of January, La Bien-Aimée met for the first year of Batavian freedom. Within less than a month, the Lodge itself puts its effect into understanding of this internationally established set of revolutionary principles. The minutes of the day open with the slogan in Dutch, Liberty, Fraternity, Equality. And then, before opening the lodge, our beloved chairman congratulated the assembled fraternity on the long-hoped-for revolution in our dear country, because of which liberty, fraternity, and equality had now become the motto of our days. And furthermore announced to the brothers that from now on, all honorary titles were held to be abolished amongst us. Woo. Overnight, the master had become a chairman. Brothers have lost their aristocratic titles within the confines of the lodge. And the motto of the French Revolution, first coined in the Dutch Republic, has been adopted. Exile brothers who have been streaming back to the lodge, those who have been oppressed, chased, even exiled by our former rulers, were welcomed, and most appropriately and movingly. So what waited? What waited? What changed? Life was going on around. I can only imagine that sense of smugness that had once existed was shaken, and the question wouldn't be to embrace the change, although some would have been adapting. Others would have been trying their best to resist, to push back on the change by any means available to them. What next? The next part came, as we know, well, that gets around to us. What next? Think of the changes that happened. Think of it realistically. Sort of fellows that have been chased off because of the political structure, and they had left Le Bien-Aimé Lodge for various reasons, and now we're being repatriated. But this scent of revolution was in the air. Are we ever really that far from that sense of longing for a better life, or evaluating when the systems have declined and they're no longer serving the need? Well, masonry isn't new to this kind of condition. It was part of life. And now we have some material. This isn't a diary of every lodge in every part of Holland, but it is a window that connects the idea of social change and internal response, the reaction in the lives of the organization. And remember, in previous episodes, we've been talking about the growth of nationalism. Now we see it's an expensive process, this business called nationalism. Maybe this will help. The nearness of you. Yeah, I know. Pun intended. Hey, Roy Hargrove. Well, let's see. Let's hope that the music is transcribed to you this week. Resolved the problem. If not, we'll still be working, and we're going to test it out. Thank you for sitting in today and sharing a bit of time with us. Tennyson, Duke Ellington and Roy Hargrave, and some decent music. A moment to pause. Just a moment. And then get on with life. On with the happiness, the joy. If you're tuning in and you repeat, you're coming back to Masonic Effects, one will help. There's no expectation that this is a lifelong relationship. You know, your thinking changes, you change and grow, and life happens. But the very fact that you do return is reinforcing that, you know, you only have yourself to blame. The ideas, the exchange, and here we try to tap into things that help inspire creativity, the music, jazz, and it's not to say that the classical music doesn't inspire creativity, but jazz. There's a universality, there's a universal nature to jazz, as I like to think. And the poetry certainly does that, opens that window. If only we could wander through an art gallery listening to Masonic Effects in headphones. Wonder what the world would be like. I do appreciate you sitting in, especially in conflict areas around the world. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness when you're out there. The tensions are around. Down the street, we're seeing placards, people on the street marching and protesting. It's happening. It's happening. All the things that we thought would only be over there, they're visiting us here. And history is giving us some guideposts. Committing acts of random Masonic kindness may not be as easy, especially when you're trying to think about doing that with somebody that is supposed to be your adversary, supposed to be. And we're supposed to rise above the politics and beliefs. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you again soon. Take care of yourself.